Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good afternoon. It's Sunday, December 8th, and you are listening to the College Football Daily, a 24/7 sports podcast dedicated to catching you up on and breaking down the day's college football news. Today, the day's college football news is the college football playoff field just announced live on ESPN. I'm Connor Tapp, and joining me to talk about that is 24/7 Sports national college football writer Chris Hummer. So, Chris, we have a playoff field. The way conference championship weekend played out, there was no uncertainty over who would be getting in. It looked for a time as though Ohio State losing to Wisconsin by 2 touchdowns at halftime might open the door for some controversy. But in the end, the Buckeyes roared back. And so now we've got LSU at 1, Ohio State at 2, Clemson at 3, and Oklahoma at 4. Any surprises in the fact that LSU jumped ahead of Ohio State there?
I don't think so. I think Ohio State's probably been the more complete team all year. But when you kind of just consider what LSU's done resume-wise, which is they beat Auburn, they beat Florida, they beat Alabama on the road, they just decimated Georgia basically on the road in Atlanta. It's kind of hard to leave out the kind of hard to put anybody else but the Tigers at number one, especially when you consider the way Ohio State played against Wisconsin in the first half. And I realize that it's kind of silly to penalize a team of playing a conference championship game and playing a top 10 team for the second time for kind of starting slow. But I really do think the space between those teams were so small that you had to figure out a place where you can make a difference between the two of them. And I think LSU dominating the number 4 team in the country did just that. And I think the Tigers are a deserving number 1, and it'll be interesting to see if LSU can make it past the semifinal, because then they'll have the largest home field advantage in college football history.
I wonder if it was a combination of things moving LSU in front of Ohio State. Georgia's offense is not great and was dealing with, was playing without a lot of its best players. But in the past couple of weeks, you've kind of seen LSU answer some questions about their defense, which had given up a lot of points and a lot of yards to a team like Ole Miss, who, you know, isn't going bowling and fired its coach. So, I mean, it's maybe that's a little bit encouraging to see LSU turn it on late. And we saw LSU win a game and ultimately put up almost 500 yards of offense in a game where Georgia kind of controlled the line of scrimmage on defense, and even got after Joe Burrow, sacked him a couple of times, didn't really let the Tigers run the ball, but they still found a way to keep being as productive as they've been all year, and Georgia's about as good of a defense as LSU is likely to encounter anywhere in the playoff. And just like quickly turning an eye toward LSU versus Oklahoma, man, that's interesting. So LSU has a chance to play Oklahoma and Texas in the same year. Playing Texas was a whole lot of fun. We've seen LSU kind of have a couple different speeds in the way it can play. It can play these more classic SEC style grind them out games, and it can also go toe to toe with anybody in a shootout. But at the same time, you know, Oklahoma has kind of modified the way it's been playing to kind of play within its limits and to Jalen Hurts' strengths over the course of the last month. So that's going to be a fascinating game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like in the past that this game would be all about offense, but in some ways I kind of feel like the defenses are going to decide it. I suppose the defenses generally decide it, but LSU and Oklahoma are 1 and 3 nationally in yards per play, Oklahoma being 1 and LSU number 3. So you would kind of expect this to be a shootout, and I do think there's going to be a lot of points scored, but I think this game will be decided in two areas. One, how does LSU contain Jalen Hurts? I know Jalen Hurts isn't John Rhys Plumlee, and this isn't the Ole Miss Rich Rodriguez rushing attack, but I think the styling in which Lincoln Riley's kind of molded his offense this season around Jalen Hurts has a lot of similarities, a lot of power and counter runs with the quarterback, a lot of misdirection on the ground to try to get your quarterback maybe after a read or two in space to let him make plays. And I think they're going to test LSU from a run fit kind of gap scheme discipline standpoint in a way that the Tigers maybe didn't see against Georgia and Texas A&M, two of the more vanilla offensive teams in the country, despite all their talent. Defensively for Oklahoma, I really do question. I know the unit's been a lot better. I think that pass rush especially has been a lot better. They've created pressure. Some of it's been designed through Alex Grinch blitzes, but they play fast, they play downhill, they play aggressive, which is great. But that secondary, to me, is still a big question mark, especially at corner, where the Sooners start a lot of smaller corners. I really do wonder how, like, a guy like Trey Brown, who I believe is like 5'8 or 5'9, is going to hold up against somebody like Jamar Chase or Terrence Marshall on the outside, who are just like 6'2, 6'3 freaks with a 4'4 vertical ability. And obviously, Justin Jefferson in the middle, who can run in the slot. So that's a really intriguing matchup. I think LSU is going to score a little bit more than Oklahoma at the end of the day, and I think that'll make the difference. But I think this could be a lot of fun, and you can never really count Jalen Hurts out, even though he struggled greatly against Baylor on Saturday. I'm super excited about that game.
And so that leaves us with Clemson at number 3 and Ohio State at number 2. And in the other semifinal game, and you know, these two teams are, you know, everybody talked about as the two most complete teams this year, and I think you probably still think that's true. And so it'll be really interesting to see them go head to head. And you know, Clemson will probably complain about being undefeated reigning national champion at number 3. So I mean, Clemson absolutely blew the doors off of Virginia in the ACC title game. And that certainly is the outcome we all expected. And Clemson very much lived up to and possibly even exceeded expectations in that regard. And there are two levels of this, oh, the ACC is bad take. One is that, you know, one is the lazy, you know, sports talk radio, whatever, the ACC sucks thing. And then there's, but there is, I think, a grain of interesting, an interesting nugget there where it's like, okay, I don't know if I've ever seen a team that is so much better than the rest of its conference the way Clemson is. And that's equal parts a tribute to Clemson and how good they are and a tribute to the rest of the ACC and how mediocre it is. But it does really, I think, present a challenge in projecting how Clemson is going to perform in this playoff. And I don't think they're going to like step on a rake, fall flat on their face, but you know, are they going to be able to go to the distance? Are they going to be able to go back to back against against Ohio State and then either LSU or Oklahoma in the final? It will be the two toughest games that they played all season. So it's going to be real interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, I realize how much better Clemson is than everybody in its conference, but we're still, what, we're like 12 months removed, 11 months removed from Clemson just decimating Notre Dame and Alabama in the college football playoff. So I don't have a problem projecting Clemson as a team that can handle that, even if the rigors of their ACC schedule didn't exactly test them in that regard. This team has playoff experience, and Dabo Sweeney, as annoying as he's been the last 2 months with his little Clemson talk and how disingenuous that conversation is, I think he's great at motivating his teams. We've seen that time and time again. And I think Clemson will perform really well. This isn't that 2017 Clemson team with Kelly Bryant at quarterback. Clemson has a future number one overall pick in Trevor Lawrence and multiple future first round picks on that defense and the offense. And this is a kind of a rematch of the 2016 Fiesta Bowl, which I believe Clemson won 31-0. I realize this is a way different Ohio State team, a more talented Ohio State team, and a Ohio State team with kind of a different edge. But it is kind of a compelling rematch in that regard. And I think you said it well. I think these are the two most complete teams in the country, and I would argue these are probably the two best teams in the country. Whoever came out of this game, I'm going to probably pick to win the national championship. I think I picked Clemson initially kind of coming out of these rankings, but I'd probably pick Ohio State over LSU too. So in that regard, it's kind of an unfortunate matchup for the two teams, but Clemson was always going to be a tough draw at number three. I'm interested. I think these two teams match up really well across the board. Is there an area you think that one of the teams has a particular advantage in?
I think Ohio State is maybe not, can be slowed down on an on offense in a way that I'm not sure Clemson can. Ohio State to me, in, you know, not regarding scheme or the specifics of how they go about it, but just in terms of what the shape of an Ohio State game feels like when you're watching, it feels a lot like early part of this decade Alabama team, where they are just going to maul you and pound you with what they do, and eventually it's going to wear you down. I wonder if they fall in a hole like they did against Wisconsin, against a team that's able to kind of maintain that offensive production at a higher level than Wisconsin could, will Ohio State struggle to kind of claw their way back into the game a little bit more than they did on Saturday night? And I think Clemson could present that kind of problem for Ohio State. I think LSU could certainly present that kind of problem for Ohio State. So I think I go with Clemson in this matchup for that reason. And hey, I mean, we've got, you know, a month between now and that game, and a lot of the and I expect Justin Fields next year to be a little bit more dynamic in that Ohio State offense. Not that he's been bad. I mean, we're talking about him as a possible Heisman finalist here, but he's just not quite that game changer. And it's not, Ohio State's offense doesn't feel quite as explosive and dynamic as maybe it could, I guess.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I actually think Wisconsin provided a window into how to stop Ohio State a little bit on Saturday night. Specifically, when you take away the zone read game from Ohio State, which is essentially make Justin Fields one-dimensional, that really, really potent rushing attack, probably the best rushing attack in the country from a yards per play perspective, is grounded a little bit. Ohio State's offensive line is excellent. J.K. Dobbins is excellent. But without the threat of Justin Fields being able to run, which obviously was impacted by him nursing a knee injury, really kind of slows the Buckeyes down. So I'm curious, like, if Ohio State can't run the ball well, and I fully expect Brent Venables to make Justin Fields beat him through the air, which is a dangerous proposition when you consider the receivers Ohio State has. But I still think that's the kind of the weaker of the two elements of the Ohio State offense, how that'll go. And I guess conversely, you have to figure out a way to stop Chase Young if you're Clemson. And Jackson Carmen's been pretty shaky at left tackle this season at times. So that'll be a pretty compelling matchup as well. I'm just super excited about the Fiesta Bowl. I think it's probably the best game of the year so far.
So let's talk about some of the narratives, some of the teams that didn't make their way into the college football playoffs. So let's start with the Pac-12 championship game, which, because Trey and I were doing our live show in Atlanta on Friday night, I was not able to personally witness this game, but Oregon kind of ended up stomping Utah and really changing the shape of the playoff discussion heading into Saturday. Chris, takeaways from this game and meta Pac-12 takeaways in terms of them missing out on the playoff for a third year in a row.
Okay. I would go big picture takeaway first. I think Oregon, the way the Pac-12 is set up, is potentially going to be able to go on a run of dominance in the league the next couple of years. When you consider the way Mario Cristobal is recruiting, the Ducks are likely to sign a second top 10 recruiting class in a row. They had never done that in program history before. When you consider everybody the Ducks bring back, which is pretty much everybody outside of Justin Herbert and one or two of their highest caliber offensive linemen, and you consider the way the rest of the conference sets up, which is Washington, Chris Peterson stepping down. Stanford doesn't look like what it was before. Three of their starters have already opted to go in the transfer portal this offseason. David Shaw's name is going to pop up with NFL coaching rumors this offseason. And USC, while they are led by Clay Helton, I do not think is an annual Pac-12 title threat. I think the league has opened up wide for Oregon to kind of barrel through and go on a bit of a run. And at the end of the day, And I know this doesn't matter on a night-to-night perspective. Oregon is just simply more talented than Utah. And the three games Utah played this season that were against top 20 team talent composite competition, they lost two of them and played a one-possession game to Washington. So as well-coached as Utah is, and I would take Kyle Whittingham as a coach over most people in the country, I think talent ultimately does make a difference. And that's kind of why, in my opinion, Oregon was able to win that game and dominate it the way they did. From a meta conversation, I think the Pac-12 is fine. I think they are there's more parity in that league than almost any other, I would argue, outside of maybe the Big 12. And what the Pac-12 really lacks is a dominant USC. I think the Pac-12 desperately needs USC to get back to the national conversation in that mix. And I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, given the way they're recruiting. But when your elite team is not performing the way you expect it to, often there's going to be a gap in kind of the way the conference is perceived. The ACC has gotten really lucky with Florida State falling off, that Clemson's kind of managed to rise in its place. The SEC will always have that team, and the Big Ten usually will, with Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State being the same division. But the Pac-12, when USC isn't there, I just don't think they have a program. Maybe Oregon becomes that you can consistently count on as a national title contender. And I think that's the biggest problem with the Pac-12 from an on-field perspective. Obviously, that conference has some off-field issues ranging from their conference commissioner leadership to a pretty failing television network. But on the field, the Pac-12 really misses USC, and I think we're going to continue to see that moving forward unless Oregon can kind of step up and fill that gap.
So after the Pac-12 lost, you know, the Pac-12, or after the Pac-12 lost, after Utah lost and the Pac-12 was functionally eliminated from the college football playoff discussion, then the first game that we had on Saturday was the Big 12 championship game with Oklahoma and Baylor, knowing at that point, essentially, unless Georgia lost or Georgia won, excuse me, then this was essentially a play-in game for the college football playoff. And Chris, you were there at this game, and it's kind of fascinating that the Big 12 ultimately decided by two really incredibly entertaining games between Baylor and Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, it's first of all, just like to reflect for a second that Baylor with a third string quarterback came essentially an overtime period away from making the college football playoffs. It's just incredible. You gotta tip your hat to Matt Rhule, who I now firmly believe belongs in the elite coaching category in college football. I think there are only maybe two or three coaches in the country I'd rather have than Matt Rhule at this point. And I realize that probably sounds a bit hyperbolic, but I think I pretty firmly believe that given what we've seen him do at Temple and Baylor the last couple of years. But Oklahoma's I know they haven't won a playoff game to this point, but you have to really admire what Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops have done there. That's five state Big 12 championships. That is not easy to do in what I consider the strongest top to bottom league in the country in terms of like a league that plays a round robin schedule in which that, as we've seen, Oklahoma can lose to almost anybody in the Big 12 from week to week. And for them to keep winning is pretty incredible. And I don't think this Oklahoma team is as good as what we've seen the last 2 years. I think the LSU game is going to be a lot of fun, but you'd certainly have questions about Jalen Hurts based on the way he played on Saturday. And I have as much respect for Jalen Hurts as anybody in college football, but Lincoln Riley, he had three opportunities in the second half to really kind of put the foot on the gas and go. There was fourth and goal twice in the red zone, and he opted to kick field goals on both occasions. And at the end of the game, Oklahoma had a chance to win it in regulation at fourth and three from Baylor's 47, and they punted. I think that says a lot about trusting his defense, but I also think it says Lincoln Riley doesn't believe he has a quarterback who's going to make those plays right now, kind of in the way Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield did. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy with Oklahoma, given the way the season's kind of developed.
So I do want to say RIP to the two-loss non-conference championship Georgia could still get in narrative that lived for about 3 hours on December 7th, died 3 hours later, also on December 7th. When Baylor had its third string quarterback in the game and Oklahoma was looking like it might come out with a very narrow, not overwhelmingly impressive win, people were kind of saying, okay, so can Georgia keep it close against LSU, lose that game, and still get into the playoff? I always thought that was absolutely bananas. And I'm glad that we were prevented from having an insane two-loss non-conference champion. Georgia could get in, take a bubble up before the final announcement 2 years in a row. Once was enough. And I'm glad we didn't have to go down that road again.
Oh, it's such an absurd kind of take for people to kind of throw out there. Like, I realize we're SEC heavy. In college football, I realize it matters more over there in the Southeastern Conference, but it's absurd to say that the Georgia team that lost to South Carolina had any shot and deserved any opportunity to make the playoff with two losses, given that one of those losses came to one of the worst South Carolina teams we've seen in a decade. Like, I'm sorry to your Gamecocks, Connor. But, like, it's just like we're just trying to create drama at that point, and it was ridiculous. But Georgia got exposed, I think. Kirby Smart's going to have kind of an off-season of contemplation about how he handles that offense moving forward, because I don't think Kirby Smart's in trouble or anything. I don't even think anything like that. Like, Kirby Smart's recruited really well. Kirby Smart has essentially had his team on the cusp of the college football playoff for 3 straight years, which is a heck of an achievement. But there's clearly kind of a ceiling limitation on Georgia that there isn't on some of the other powers in the SEC, like Alabama and LSU, based on the way they played offense. And I think we saw that pretty clearly against LSU on Saturday. So I'll be interested to see how Kirby Smart chooses to utilize Jake Fromm's last season on campus. Because, I mean, I know there's a chance that Jake Fromm leaves for the NFL draft, but given the way we saw him play this year, I would fully expect him to be back.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Mike Bobo, former Georgia offensive coordinator, now needs a job. So who knows? Maybe that's an option. And speaking of that, there is obviously a lot of coaching news that we haven't mentioned. Lane Kiffin to Ole Miss, Mike Norvell to FSU. Don't have time to get into that on this episode. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow morning, kind of diving deeper on some of those coaching transactions that have been going on during conference championship weekend. But that's going to do it for today's episode of the College Football Daily. If you appreciate what we're doing, please express your support by leaving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. If you're a Pandora person, the event that Trey and I did with Rusty Manziel, Shay Dixon, former Georgia All-American linebacker Rennie Curran was there, as was Drew Butler, former All-American punter. Drew Butler was a last-minute add to the lineup. It was a really fun show at Pandora's incredible offices in Atlanta, Georgia, and they're really getting into the podcast space now, and the College Football Daily is on there. So while you're making your Christmas radio over on Pandora, as I like to do every time this year, I like a nice Sufjan Stevens Christmas seed as a way to get a channel going. While you're doing that, hop over to the podcast tab on Pandora and check us out there too. For Chris Hummer, our producer Tony Levitt, I'm Connor Tapp, and we'll see you on Monday morning for the next episode of the College Football Daily.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.